information is free. There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
Yes, yes. But
we care.
Here to border
it shows.
The country.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not roll up with it, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
There is no dark side of the moon, really. As a matter of fact, it's all dark. The only thing that makes it look light is the sun. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 144 of MediaMonarchy.com. It's October 9th, 2009. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show. For all your news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups, this week, jam-packed, Peter Lavenda and the Polanski polemic. Blowing up the moon, Obamasiah and the Prince of Peace Prize, Afghaniversary, War Crimes and World Power, Ahmadinejad. We got Daniel Sunjata and the 9/11 dead dogs, police state updates, media memes and CBS sex, plus IBM, Google, and the birth and rebirth of the barcode, and tons more if we can cram it in on October 9th, 2009, episode 144 of MediaMonarchy.com.
There's a time for living. Time keeps on flying. Think you're loving, baby, and all you're doing is crying. Can you feel? Those feelings real. Look at your game, girl. Look at your game, girl. What a mad delusion. Living in that confusion. Frustration and doubt. Can you ever live without pain? A sad, sad game. Mad game. Just to say your love's not enough. If on you can't be true, you can tell those lies, baby, but you're real. Look at your game, girl. Oh, look at your game, girl. It's like you can't feel, and the feelings ain't real. Then you better stop trying, or you're gonna play crying. Stop trying, or you're gonna play crying. That's the game.
This episode of MediaMonarchy.com is going to be filled with surprises, and that's the first one. Look at your game, girl. That's Charles Manson. And that really sets the table for what we're dealing with. It's episode 144. It's October 9th, 2009. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show MediaMonarchy.com, as well as our newer sister sites, FoodWorldOrder.com and CyberspaceWar.com. And we're coming to you live, as always, every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, thanks to the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, and rebroadcast live thanks to 92.3 FM and 1500 AM in Casper, Wyoming. It's 11 a.m. Mountain Time. That's all thanks to zeropointradio.com. And, of course, it's 1 p.m. on the East Coast. And you can hear Media Monarchy on the worldwide home of free speech, revereradio.net. Big thanks to 98.5 FM in Olympia, Washington, rebroadcasting MediaMonarchy.com Saturday mornings at 8 a.m. Pacific time. Thanks to Free Radio Olympia, frolympia.org. 93.9 KBFR, Boulder, freeradio.com. And I was remiss. Ground Zero Radio in Canton, Georgia, 87.9. And you can hit them up on stickam.com/groundzero. Also, thanks to 104.1 FM in Berkeley, California, berkeleyliberationradio.net. And, of course, from Glenn right here in Portland, Oregon, cascadiapublicradio.org.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
I implore you to make contact, reach out to me. You can hit me up any number of ways. Facebook.com/Media Monarchy. MySpace.com/Media Monarchy. Twitter, YouTube, Yahoo, Gmail, Skype, Instant Messenger, iTunes, RadioForAll.net, and Archive.org. It's not hard. I've got a few different emails. You can get in touch with me if you leave a comment on the page. It all goes right to me. So I want to thank a couple new listeners, Cyril and Mark. Welcome aboard. And, of course, thanks to longer-time supporters like Sheila and Alan and Alex. Thanks to all you guys. If you're new to the show, welcome aboard. This is your source for news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups, helping you see the shell game that's been going on for a long time right in front of your eyes. Every now and then you start to see it a little bit, but then they change their PR. They change their advertising campaign. Maybe they get rid of that person who was doing the voiceover before. Maybe they brought in a new front person to sell the same old product to you. As we've noted, the new world order looks very much like the old world order. So needless to say, there's tons to go over. It was already going to be a jam-packed episode. And then I get what? I go to sleep for 4 hours, and Obama wins the Nobel Peace Prize? But at least we didn't fully blow up the moon. So let's glance at Google News quickly on this morning of October 9th, 2009. GOP and even some liberals dismiss Obama Peace Prize. That's from the AP about 20 minutes ago. And the New York Post has a video from the Obamasiah himself noting, quite correctly, that he doesn't deserve the Peace Prize. We went over all the latest BioWars and swine flu updates on the B-side episode I just recorded before this, 143B. All the propaganda is there, where we note, among many other things, that the shot is the pandemic. Wired News is going over NASA's big hit, L-Cross impacts the moon. We're going to hit all of those in greater detail. A few of the other things hanging out on the side of my personalized Google News page notes. Two dead and several hospitalized at a New Age sweat lodge in Arizona. Fat City from the Associated Press, West Virginia town braces for TV show depiction. Always trying to defend my home state of West Virginia. Sometimes it's hard. But there's a lot of crap that gets thrown our way. And this looks like another example. Alan Grayson and Ron Paul question if Bernanke is fit to serve. That's from CBS News. From the New York Times, son of New York City socialite Astor could get 25 years. And of course, bad econo crash news. So that's just what is on the front of Google News right now. That's not even getting into all the things we're about to go over on cyberspacewar.com, foodworldorder.com, and mediamonarchy.com. So we started the show with, amazingly enough, that's right, it was a song from Charles Manson, aspiring musician. And the idea, one of the great historical what-ifs. What if Hitler had made it into art school? What if Charles Manson had broken into the music scene? Would American and world history, would it have been vastly different? That is just one of the plethora of things that I went over in my conversation yesterday with author Peter Lavenda. Now, if you're a longtime listener of the show, you know that I reference Peter Lavenda's work and have cited Sinister Forces numerous times. And what I went over last week quickly was the strange confluence of stories concerning the death of Manson family murderer Susan Atkins, and then the revelations of sex crimes dealing with John Phillips and the Mamas and the Papas. And then the very next day, Roman Polanski was seemingly suddenly arrested in Switzerland. All of these things reek of sinister forces. And if you do a little bit of look, a little bit of looking, a little bit of researching, if you're, you know, like Bill Hicks would say, if you're a reader, I'm a reader, sorry. My interview with Peter Lavenda will be available shortly. I haven't released it yet. I'll essentially put up all three new episodes today, so you'll have another amazing multi-hour blast of alternative news for Media Monarchy on this weekend, October 9th, 2009. But I did bring a quick clip to whet your appetite of my conversation with the author of Sinister Forces, Peter Lavenda. Can you kind of just give a thumbnail sketch of the thesis of Sinister Forces and the land and perhaps the soul of America?
Sure. Initially, I became interested in this subject during Watergate, which goes to show you how old I am. So during Watergate and during the hearings that were taking place, I saw a lot of names that were familiar or organizations that were familiar to me from before. I remember where I was, for instance, during the John F. Kennedy assassination. So I was 13 years old when Kennedy was assassinated. And I had heard about, of course, Bay of Pigs. I heard about the anti-Castro Cubans, and et cetera, et cetera. And all of the conspiracy stuff has been, you know, denied by mainstream historians. And in some cases, rightly so. Some of it is just off the wall. But in other cases, the circumstantial evidence was so big that there was something else taking place that I started to ask myself, is this a conspiracy that we're talking about in normal terms? Is it coincidence? And, you know, if so, does the word coincidence really mean anything or explain anything? Or is there a third way of looking at this? Do historical events cast ripples in time, both going towards the past and towards the future? Does a major event like this have connections leading out into other directions? So I started to investigate webs of connectivity, matrices of connections between political events and, in some cases, cultural events. And I came up with the theory, I mean, the reaction that, to my way of thinking, our country, the United States of America, is a kind of haunted house. We're haunted. We're populated by ghosts. And we walk among this haunted landscape oblivious to what's really taking place. We have had civilizations in our geographical area in the United States that are older than Stonehenge, older than the pyramids. And we basically don't recognize it. We don't see it. And we tend to believe that, you know, places like Stonehenge, places like the pyramids of Egypt, these are spooky places. These are sacred sites. These are places where odd things take place. And yet, here we are in our own country. We're surrounded by the same types of webs of connectivity, where individuals, as I detailed extensively in Sinister Forces, through the CIA's mind control programs like MKUltra, Operation Bluebird, Artichoke, and all the others, and some of the other military and intelligence agency programs, were designed to probe the human mind and its powers and its capabilities, just the way the ancient priests of Egypt did, or the druids of England, or any of these places that are so popular to mystics and to occultists and to the New Age consciousness stuff. If you start to look at the United States from the same point of view, you realize that we're awash in the same things. Scientology, since we mentioned it, is just one example of the type of spiritual currents that run through our country. So when political events take place, assassinations, when Manson family things show up, the Son of Sam killings and all of this, can we successfully isolate these things and say that was an isolated case? Charles Manson was crazy. His followers were crazy. They committed some horrible crimes. We caught them. End of story. Is that really the end of the story? Is the David Berkowitz son of Sam case? Berkowitz said he was guilty. We arrested him. We threw him in jail. End of story. Was it really the end of the story? When you find out that it wasn't the end of the story, that events like the Manson family and the Son of Sam case could be connected. When you see connections spiraling outwards to Roman Polanski, who after all was the director of the film Rosemary's Baby, which opened, you know, shortly within a year before his wife was murdered. He was in England at the time filming Day of the Dolphins. He was working on the film The Day of the Dolphins. He had to stop work because of the murders. But The Day of the Dolphins is about a political assassination. It's about using dolphins, you know, to assassinate the President of the United States.
That's just a quick little taster, little appetizer, little hors d'oeuvre from my forthcoming interview with the author of Sinister Forces, Peter LaVenda. So in addition to the Manson family and the Mamas and the Papas and Rosemary's Baby and Roman Polanski and all that stuff, add to that mix Squeaky Frome, Scientology, producer Robert Evans, West Virginia, Aleister Crowley, Disneyland. And what you get is a quick yet fascinating look behind the media mask, behind the face that they present, and a glimpse into what it all really represents. So all that and so much more is contained within this new interview from Media Monarchy with Peter LaVenda. And of course, it's all just in time for Aleister Crowley's birthday on the 12th, the bombing of the moon today, and of course, upcoming pagan Samhain holiday. That time when the line between the living and the dead is erased. In addition to the numerous mainstream portals that I mentioned, where we are making progress on Facebook and MySpace, we are reaching out, we are pushing people's buttons, we are getting important information out there. Every time I'm doing the show live, I'm also over on the great chat room over on ZeroPointRadio.com. So again, a big hat tip to those guys and all the support they've been giving Media Monarchy, Clyde Lewis and the Ground Zero Lounge, Corbett Report, and more and more. Now, having said all that, more on the Polanski polemic. This was posted up last Sunday on MediaMonarchy.com. That was October 4th, where ABC's Cokie Roberts disagrees with celebrities who have called for charges against Roman Polanski to be dropped, where she notes, among other things, and we're going to hear in just a moment, that Roman Polanski is a criminal.
We have a little bit of time left. There were two issues we were slated to talk about on the Red Roundtable. We may have two sorted issues, Roman Polanski and David Letterman. Talk a little bit about those two and why people can.
Well, they're very different from each other. I mean, I think that the David Letterman situation is not a good situation. You know, there's an inherent power imbalance in a boss versus his employees. But Roman Polanski is a criminal. No, he raped and drugged and raped and sodomized a child, and then was a fugitive from justice. As far as I'm concerned, just take him out and shoot him.
Ooh, no. We're both mothers and daughters, and I think Roman Polanski, there should be no dual system of justice in this country. He should not be privileged because he's a famous director or even because he... in the Holocaust, but I think one needs to see the documentary that was made, which I thought was very powerful in showing judicial and prosecutorial misconduct. That doesn't mean he should have fled the country. I think he needs to come back, not fight extradition, but find an appropriate way of serving time and doing justice at this stage. But I think just to shoot him, obviously I was wanted him Sunday morning.
No, obviously.
Well, to me, this is reflective of, like, to me, the whole thing, Roman Polanski, is reflective of a huge segment of Hollywood that somehow thinks because you're part of their clique and you're successful in their clique, you stand outside the law. And they wouldn't have that view about anybody else in this country, somebody from rural Alabama or from rural Mississippi that did something. They would be like, go after him. In this case, it's a commentary on Hollywood that they would allow him not to be held accountable, think it's okay for the heinous crimes that he committed, for him not to be held accountable for it.
Yes, the Hollywood view is, Planet Time is a good movie, therefore, the fact that he used a prelude and champagne to drug and rape a 13-year-old is, in the words of Harvey Weinstein, representative of Hollywood's monochrome culture. It is a so-called crime. Now, if Chinatown had not been a good movie, we might have to rethink this.
That's a video from Raw Replay from something called The Green Room, where all your favorite talking heads are slated to go on one of the Sunday morning supposed news gabfests. So it's interesting that we hear Cokie Roberts say we should just take him out and shoot him, and you hear another voice go, oh, wait, Cokie. That would be Council on Foreign Relations member and head editor of The Nation magazine. I believe it's Katrina Vandenhuevel. And the other guy flanking her, and the person you hear at the very end referencing, of course, Chinatown, which has to do with incest and Jack Nicholson and all those things, again, all gone over in my interview with Peter LaVenda, that would be Council on Foreign Relations member George Will. So we're going to leave the Polanski polemic right there. Again, I implore you to check out my interview. Spread the word. Fortunately, the special interview episodes that I've been doing for Media Monarchy, they all easily become my most downloaded episodes. My previous, most recent interview with Richard Grove of TragedyAndHope.com in just a few short weeks is pretty much my second most downloaded show in the 3 years of doing MediaMonarchy.com. So that's good, positive reinforcement for more special interview episodes for Media Monarchy. Having said that, let's now get to what I thought was going to be the main lead story. But then there's a lot, it seems. So if we jump over to cyberspacewar.com, moon crash to create 6-mile plume as NASA searches for water. This was posted last Saturday on Cyberspace War. That was October 3rd. And I tried to prep folks with little comments and status reports and things of blowing up the moon on Friday. Remember, America, blowing up the moon. Moon belongs to America. You know, playing a flag in it, played golf on it. What else can you do with it? We added the updates from NASA themselves, and if I didn't really need that 4 hours of sleep I got last night, I would have been up at 4:30 a.m. Pacific time this morning to see something happen to the moon. When I did look at it before the sun was up, I couldn't see anything with the naked eye. I'm not sure if I'm supposed to in the first place. Again, having said all these things and, you know, snide comments again on the face space that, you know, oh, $79 million, that's no big deal. That's such a small part of the budget. So I'd like to see, you know, put up the status, you know, that NASA puts man in an apartment. Oh wait, I'm sorry, that's comedy from David Cross. So I had the report from the Times Online about the L-Cross mission, and it's all about discovering water. It's all about setting up bases that, in a way, the cynic in me says, well, of course, once you've screwed this planet, you've got your, you know, your doomsday seed vault in Svalbard, Norway, and you got to go for perhaps alternative 3 and get people off this doomed rock, right? Because we're bad. We're we're the bad humans that are ruining the planet. It's not because we've been forced to use the destructive cherry juice and products and plastic from the finance oligarchs for the last few centuries. But it's our fault. We're bad. I'm sorry. Some of the updates, though, and again, this all happened just a few hours ago, so there's more than enough news out there that you can find on NASA blowing up the moon. But we had the Stop NASA Bombing the Moon petition from the Register. NASA tweaks killer asteroid's trajectory of death. This was basically at the last moment. They steered it into somewhere else. Moonstruck making one giant thud for mankind. And the update from this morning from Reuters, U.S. spacecraft crash into moon in search for water. Searching for stocks of water on the moon, NASA, which, as we've joked, stands for Never a Straight Answer, crashed two spacecraft into an eternally dark lunar crater on Friday, hoping to splash ice into the light where instruments could assess it. A 2-ton empty rocket stage hit the dark Cabeus crater near the moon's south pole at about 4:31 a.m. Pacific time, and a second craft crashed 4 minutes later. A camera on the following spacecraft did not capture an image of the impact as hoped, but scientists said they were confident that the explosive hit took place as planned. Quote, "We didn't see a big splashy plume like we wanted to see," said Michael Bickay, director of science at the National Aeronautics and Space Administration's Ames Research Center. Bickay said an infrared camera showed changes that suggested an explosion. The other bit is DEFCON 10-8 on cyberspacewar.com. DEFCON being my short-term name for just an ugly list of headlines. Search results, Saturn rings, and cyber soldiers. Google pulls Pirate Bay from their search results. That's from Threat Level. We also have something called the Strategic Space Symposium coming up November 2nd through the 4th. Speaking of strategery, Science Applications International, SAIC, has formed a strategic alliance with a smart grid technology company called BPL Global Limited. After 5 years, space tourism still a work in progress. Astronomers discover massive Saturn ring. Kessler Air Force Base to train cyber warriors in Mississippi. That's from SunHerald.com. Threat of next world war may be in cyberspace, so says the United Nations. That's from DefenseTalk.com. And the last note on this DEFCON list of headlines on CyberspaceWar.com, presidential powers during cybersecurity emergencies. What goes along with all this from the AFP, U.S. Navy creates command to maintain cyber supremacy. The U.S. Navy announced on October 1st that it was consolidating intel gathering and other data capabilities under a single command in a bid to maintain an increasingly challenged U.S. military supremacy in cyberspace. Naval Intelligence Chief Vice Admiral Jack Dorsett said the Navy was creating an information dominance corps, bringing together over 44,000 sailors, including an expansion of the Navy's cyber workforce by about 1,000 people. The move was part of a broader U.S. effort to maintain competitive advantage over adversaries like China. Chief of Naval Operations Admiral Gary Roughead described the cyber world as a battle space where attacks on U.S. security and military systems are unlikely to wane. So among numerous other things, you go, God, why do people hate us so much? Why do we get attacked all the time? I have no idea why this is happening. Smash, crush, kill. So the presidential powers during a cyber emergency, I'm sure, are going to be quite similar to what we recently covered, or what we're about to cover. Jesus, I can't even keep it all straight. Essentially, the Obama administration, you know, reaffirms their right for indefinite detentions, but didn't seek any actual new powers, because essentially they don't need any new enumeration of powers. We've already handed it all over to them. The puppet-in-chief can declare national emergency, and it's off to the races, my friends. I did have a quick conversation with someone at work where it was nice to be able to quickly mention that they were, you know, kind of getting freaked out about the news and all the Iran fear-mongering and things. And, you know, and asked him, was like, are you really afraid of Iran? Are you more afraid of these missiles and these things that they may have? Not to mention, of course, who gives them all of this garbage and the whole pawn charade game of it all. Are you more afraid of that? Are you more afraid of what's happening in your own community? We know that the sound wave cannons are rolling. We know that the economy is crashing. We know that they may try to force vaccinations upon us very soon. So are you more afraid of that, or are you more afraid of some boogie man in some Middle East country with brown people that hate us for our freedoms? This friend at work fortunately said, no, I'm more afraid of martial law. So let's get to it. Like I said, I couldn't go to sleep for 4 hours without the Obamasiah winning the Prince of Peace Prize. So posted up by way of Not Another Conspiracy, as well as RussiaToday.com. Lip service wins Obama Nobel Peace Prize, despite, of course, all those pesky wars. Two things to note is that now Obama has even more in common with Henry Kissinger, another noted criminal who can't travel freely around the world for fear of being picked up and extradited for war crimes. Henry Kissinger, you know, one of his trilateral buddies, who says that Obama has a great chance of helping forge a new world order. It's also worth noting that the Nobel Prize is named after somebody who liked to blow things up.
Obama is the surprise winner of the 2009 Nobel Peace Prize. The committee praised what it called his extraordinary efforts to strengthen international diplomacy. Well, the American president in power just 9 months was chosen over the 204 other people on this year's record length shortlist. For more, I'm now joined in the studio by a political analyst, Peter Lavelle, and by Vladimir Kozin, another political analyst. Well, Mr. Kozin, it's less than a year since Barack Obama became president. Do you think this term is long enough to merit winning the award?
To cover this short period of time, and especially in the case when we heard a lot of nice words, but saw no practical deeds in all these key domains, international security, arms control, and international diplomacy.
Pierre Lavelle, I have a question to you. Do you agree with that, or do you think there's actually
no.
There is something that Barack Obama has achieved?
I think it's aspirational. They hope he will achieve. But it's only words right now. I think giving it to sitting politicians is a huge mistake because we don't know what they're going to do later. Henry Kissinger comes to mind. Arafat comes to mind. They ended a lot different than when they were in office here. So I think the Nobel Committee is making a big mistake, personally. I think it's very premature.
Mr. Kozin, question to you. Do you think that this decision undermines the reputation of the Nobel Peace Prize?
Definitely it will drastically undermine the Nobel Peace Committee, especially if you take into account that there is no actually practical breakthrough in nuclear arms control. We are just approaching a strategic offensive arms reduction treaty, but there is no actually any further movement in tactical nuclear weapons, in banning potential deployment of arms in outer space. And we are still having bloody conflicts in Iraq and in Afghanistan, when a lot of innocent people are being smashed by heavy bombardment. So it's a ridiculous decision, I should say. And many Russians to whom I have already spoken to raised their eyebrows because of this decision.
Peter, do you think that President Obama was surprised himself?
I think he was very surprised. But, you know, he's a war president right now. He's not a president of peace. He's a president of a country at war. So I find this almost farcical, to be honest with you.
And how do you think this decision that they gave him the Nobel Peace Prize, will it have any influence on his policies now?
Well, I think that's what they're hoping for, but I think that's really kind of childish. It doesn't work that way. Just because you get an award, you're going to change your behavior. No, it's the other way around.
Oh, thank you very much, both, for your comments. That was Peter Lavelle in the studio talking to us, and Vladimir Kozin, a political analyst.
And he said it right there, it's almost farcical, which if you'll recall last week's theme, is that all this seems to be a prelude to a tragedy or a farce, or perhaps both. But now let's grab an update from the Los Angeles Times, reaction to Obama's Nobel Peace Prize mixed. What a difference a week makes. Last Friday, as of course we reported to you as it broke live here on MediaMonarchy.com, despite pleas by Oprah and the Obamas, an Olympics that was, in many U.S. citizens' minds, rightfully ours, was awarded to the largest city of the largest country in South America, a continent that has never had the glory of hosting an Olympiad. The nation gasped, while those in the right-leaning portion of the blogosphere chuckled. 1 week later, today, Obama woke up to his daughters informing him that he had won the Nobel Peace Prize. A nation gasped. Again. While the reaction from the conservative blogs and the right-wing commentators was mostly predictable, liberal blog TalkLeft.com seemed to agree with the sentiment that the award comes undeserved and, furthermore, should be politely rejected by Obama. Just because the Nobel Committee wants to make fools of themselves, Obama should not have to play along. He should turn it down. Other lefty bloggers, though, saw some method in the perceived madness. Glenn Greenwald of Salon said that when he first read today's news, he thought the jokers at The Onion had hacked into CNN.com. But then he realized that perhaps Obama actually has created the foundations of change in his first 8 months of his presidency. And I don't really want to read any more because I do like the work that Glenn Greenwald does. So I'll just kind of hide from that. So, of course, we'll periodically check back and forth on Google News as we see the reaction. And again, we've noted time and time again, remember, the real action is in the reaction. But one of the commentators in that Russia Today clip noted quite correctly that Obama is a war president. He is not a peace president. Now you can say, oh, but these were Bush's wars that he helps fund. And he votes for all of it. Because Afghanistan is the right war, remember? It's critical to America. So this moves us right into our Obamasiah and the Apostles of War update. Fake left, move right. More wars and Patriot Acts. The first thing we'll hit, appropriately enough, from military.com, Obama meets with Killer McChrystal in Denmark. This would be last Friday in Copenhagen. Obama summoned his top commander in Afghanistan for a 25-minute meeting aboard Air Force One last Friday as part of his review of a war strategy that has divided the president's national security team. Army General Stanley McChrystal and Obama met just before the president returned to Washington from Copenhagen, where he was pimping the Olympics, or the Pimp Olympics, as we coined here last week. We've got more, and I think it's peppered throughout this posting. McChrystal then, oh God, he spoke out of turn. He basically had his own little press conference where he said, this ain't working, we need more troops. And in a way, when you look at it just pragmatically, if you're trying to win a war or complete some kind of option, you're going to need the materials and the peoples to do it. That is something, again, we've noted time and time again. So I'm sorry, it's sidebar after sidebar here. A lot of times, the big military generals that get booted out, politics aside about whether, you know, of course, all these wars are, of course, based on deception and lies throughout history. All war is based on deception. Sun Tzu, The Art of War. That when you see the big military generals get pissed and quit or get moved away, it's usually because they see that the leaders are really screwing around. They realize, hey, you don't actually seem to want to win this war. This all just seems to be some sort of military-industrial complex PR move. As again, it is also that. So we've gone over some of Obama's criminal cabinet, and again, we broke it down on the most recent Project Censor Top 25 list. On the B-side episode just a little bit ago, Obama and his Trilateral Commission cabinet. One of the other folks that we basically broke it to you. And again, for the last year and a half on MediaMonarchy.com, we've been breaking down the phony left-right paradigm on the new Obamasiah. And again, don't look at what they say, look at what they do. Look at who they're with. Look at who they appoint. Now, having said don't listen to what they say, let's listen to what one of Obama's chief economic advisors and Skull and Bones member was joking about, that the Obama strategy is communism. This from WorldNet Daily. The Obama administration formulates its economic policies from the playbooks of communist philosophers Karl Marx and Leon Trotsky, joked White House economic advisor Austin Skull and Bones Goolsbee. Quote, I mean, it's been a long, long time since things were this bad, so we kind of had to go back and look at the old textbooks, Karl Marx, Trotsky, and the thing we found was that it was critical that we do something. Goolsbee quipped at the 16th annual DC's Funniest Celebrity Contest. The Obama advisor's routine mimicked the Mr. Subliminal skits on NBC's Saturday Night Live, in which he made a statement in a normal voice, then revealed his inner thoughts, sotto voce. I believe it was Kevin Nealon that did that. So yeah, so Obama would say, you know, this is, you know, change we could believe in, or that this is reform, or yes we can, or phony Goldman Sachs frontman. Fake left puppet. Progressive, anti-war, Democrat, foundation-funded garbage. Sorry, I'm not very good at that. I should have practiced my subliminal, Mr. Subliminal voice. White House doctored photo in a botched photo op. This from the New York Post, nypost.com. Obama rolled out the red carpet and handed out doctor's white coats at a recent healthcare PR stunt But apparently everybody didn't get the memo, so when you looked out in the crowd, not everybody had their white coats on. Again, it was fake. The amazing thing that even though it seems that, and on a lot of levels it's true, that the Obama administration is it's slick, amazing, Madison Avenue propaganda, that for the most part works, and idiots still wear the t-shirts around and all that garbage with the occult logos, and again, how can they even... If I worked in a different place, perhaps I would probably get on people's nerves all the time asking them about their Obama, Rama shirts and how they feel right now. See, yeah, peace prize? Peace president? How are those wars going? A lot of the things that are seeming to come out, again, in these first 8 months or so, are just as ham-fisted as the idiot fake conservatives the previous 8 years. So again, just another thing that shows there ain't too much damn difference between the phony left and right. Another note, another ham-fisted screw-up. Obama has that perfect Colgate smile in every photograph. This from labnol.org, labnol.org, that basically breaks down the photos and puts them in a slideshow that shows that every single photo has been photoshopped, and Obama looks exactly the same, even though he's shown shaking hands with the grip and grin with different folks. More importantly, however, from, interestingly enough, the Weekly Standard, but sometimes, again, you got to get your news where the news is coming out. We're not partisan here. You can't say that. At the UN, the Obama administration backs limits on free speech. The Obama administration has marked its first foray into the UN human rights establishment by backing calls for limits on freedom of expression. The newly minted American policy was rolled out at the latest session of the UN Human Rights Council, which ended in Geneva last Friday. American diplomats were there for the first time as full council members and intent on making friends. Obama chose to join the council despite the fact that the Organization of the Islamic Conference holds the balance of power and human rights, yada yada. That's all there from the Weekly Standard, another example of hypocrisy. From the Washington Post, Obama praises U.S. intel efforts against al-Qaeda. Watch out. Al-CIA is going to get you. Those guys that live in caves hate you for our freedom. Remember, of course, al-Qaeda literally translates to the base. And it means the database of Mujahideen fighters that we funded against the Soviets in the late 70s, back when, you know, had people that aren't in around anymore, you know, like Robert Gates and Zbigniew Brzezinski. That was then. You know, so much has changed now. U.S. will disregard borders in terrorist hunt, says Obama. That's from Press TV. Obama looks at Pakistan while reassessing Afghanistan strategy. That's from the Los Angeles Times. From the Deutsche Press Agency, Obama's going to head to Japan, China, Singapore, and South Korea in November. But from threat level, senators vote to renew Patriot Act spy powers. A deeply divided Senate committee yesterday on Thursday, October 8, 2009, forwarded legislation to the full Senate that reauthorizes three expiring provisions of the Patriot Act hastily adopted in the wake of 9/11. Thursday's 11-8 vote by the Senate Judiciary Committee came as lawmakers struggled to beat a looming deadline. The three provisions expire at year's end. This measure greatly expanded the government's ability to spy on Americans in the name of national security. Again, thanks, guys. Thanks for the change. Thanks for revoking the Patriot Act. Thanks for defunding the War of Terror. Thanks for getting those troops out of Iraq and Afghanistan. And God knows where else we're going to pop up. We already have our proxies playing both ends against the middle, all according to the grand chessboard. Another note on our corrupt Congress, which, of course, I should remind you, a few months ago, we had a poll that showed that the majority of Americans would like to see Congress replaced by random people from the phone book. Nice work, if you can get it. The House has cut their work week to 2.5 days. Pretty sweet. The last bit is a video clip that once I started to edit, I realized sounds like garbage, and so I cut it. But you can watch it for yourself. It's another example of the Obama youth. But they're on CNN, in this case, singing Obamacare propaganda. Yes, we can. As I note and have mentioned many, many times that, again, as Facebook has become the most popular digital town square, it's the place to put out the information and to push buttons. Every now and then I'll sort of remember that all my posts are going to go up on that page where high school friends and friends and family and all those folks are going to see the headlines and hopefully have some kind of reaction. Here's one where it's deliberately pointed. And it's a question. Remember those wars that you used to be against? Yeah. At least somebody does. Cindy Sheehan does. This from CBS News. Cindy Sheehan, dressed in all black with the words "Greed Kills" printed on her chest, was arrested by United States Park Police on Monday, October 5th, after chaining herself to a White House fence as part of a protest against the wars in Afghan-Iraq. According to organizers, more on that from commondreams.org, 61 people in total were arrested at the protest, which was also in service of efforts to close Guantanamo and Bagram and surge spending on housing and jobs. Organizers said hundreds participated in the protest, which included poetry song and puppet heads of Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, and Rice dressed in prison stripes. While some protesters chained themselves to the White House fence, others lay on the ground pretending to be dead. That from CNN. Organizers also requested a meeting with the Prince of Nobel Peace Prize, Obama, to discuss their beliefs.
At least 50 people were arrested outside of the White House today during an anti-war protest. Protesters were taken into custody after police requested they leave the area, and they refused. Prior to the arrest, hundreds rallied in front of the White House for hours. They called for an end to the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and requested a meeting with President Obama.
Continuing and expanding this occupation of Afghanistan is absolutely illegitimate, unjust, and immoral.
They were joined by American anti-war activist Cindy Sheehan and anti-war groups like Code Pink and Veterans for Peace.
U.S. foreign policy is one that is not moving us towards peace. It's not one that's good for the world.
The protests, which came just days after one of the deadliest attacks on U.S. forces in Afghanistan, coincides with the war's anniversary. October 2009 marks its eighth year.
No one's been able to find yet in either the Bush regime or the Obama administration what would constitute winning this war. They clearly don't have a strategy that's based on even knowing what winning would be.
Armed with megaphones, protesters chanted, performed mock waterboarding, and carried caskets through the crowd. And while many united for political purposes, some showed up for personal reasons.
I know what it's like to lose someone to this terrible war, because I did lose someone, my son.
For UPI.com, I'm Kristen Volk.
The update from ABC News, Cindy Sheehan is now moving to the District of Criminals. She's back, and this time she's here to stay. Cindy Sheehan says she is moving to Washington, D.C. The anti-war activist was outside the White House for the second day in a row with a bullhorn and a handful of protesters shouting against the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, Guantanamo, and calling for health care, not warfare. Sheehan became a prominent voice against the Iraq war after her son, Special Casey Sheehan, I believe that's probably supposed to be Specialist, Casey Sheehan was killed in Iraq in 2004 and spent years hounding George W. Bush while he was hanging out on his fake ranch set in Crawford, Texas. Now she's turned her attention to the new puppet, that would be the Prince of Peace, recently following him and his family on his vacation to Martha's Vineyard, and now planning to move to the District of Criminals sometime this winter. Sheehan says she sees no difference between the foreign policy of the last president and this one, saying, quote, "Sometimes I look at what I think Senator McCain would be doing and what Obama's doing, and I can't discern any difference. And I think that Obama's foreign policy is obviously a continuation. When you have Robert Gates, when you have McChrystal, when you have Hillary Clinton, who's supposed to be the Secretary of State, but who has always been for these wars of aggression, I see it's clearly a continuation of the policy of empire. A note of thanks to my man Henrik at redicecreations.com for putting up a link to this story and helping spread the word. Remember those wars you used to be against? Now, as we heard in that clip, and what gets us into our next posting, the latest rundown on the war whores. Afghaniversary protests, morale, and money. Yes, that's right, my friends. We've just had the 8th anniversary of the war on Afghanistan. If you recall, in the weeks leading up to 9/11, we were already amassing ships. We knew that we were going to go there. Carpet of gold or carpet of bombs? We were going to go for the carpet of bombs, and of course we got our catalyzing Reichstag fire event, and again, it was off to the races. So thanks to BerkeleyLiberationRadio.net for a note on their organizing for some of their protests in Berkeley, for the protest on the 8th anniversary of the war in Afghanistan. Again, huge thanks to BerkeleyLiberationRadio.net for carrying MediaMonarchy.com. But back to the list. War whores, Afghaniversary protests, morale, and money. U.S. military advisors told to keep remarks private. This, of course, referencing what I mentioned a little bit ago with Killer McChrystal. Defense Secretary Robert Gates said Monday that President Obama's advisors should keep their guidance private, in effect admonishing the top commander in Afghanistan for publicly advocating an approach requiring more troops, even as the White House reassesses its strategy. The comment by Gates came a day after Obama's national security advisor, Jim Jones, said that military commanders should convey their advice through the chain of command. A reaction, again, to Army General Stanley Killer McChrystal's public statements in support of his troop-intensive strategy for stabilizing Afghanistan. A note from the current frontman, spokesman, for the criminal cabinet and the Obamasiah, Robert Gibbs. We've noted many, many times it's always interesting to watch how quickly press secretaries get cycled through, because again, psychologically, you can only get up and lie to people for so long before, one, you just emotionally and mentally can't take it anymore, and two, no one believes your lies anymore, if they ever did in the first place. Now, if you were being paid big, big money, perhaps you could go on acting. But in the case of someone like Robert Gibbs, I'm sure he'll probably make it through the year, but we'll see. Oh, but this video from Raw Replay, he notes that the White House says that Afghanistan withdrawal is not on the table. Of course, it's there reassessing the Afghan surge. A note on DARPA by way of Danger Room. Ex-DARPA chief Tony Tether has now joined a D.C. lobbying firm. Yet another example of the revolving door between the military and the government. Good morning, Afghanistan! U.S. fights Taliban on the airwaves. You're listening to WIED 102.5 FM, The Bomb! Joked Staff Sergeant Todd Bowers as he slotted another cassette of religious chants into his portable radio station. While most of the battles fought by U.S. Marines in the restive Farah province are against improvised explosive devices and guns, Bowers, 30, is fighting a war of words to win the hearts and minds of people in rural western Afghanistan. The radio station, a portable deck, and a 45-foot antenna at the military base in Golestan began as a chance to give local villagers a taste of the music that they were banned from hearing under the hardline Taliban rule. Remember those guys who burnt down all the opium fields who, of course, had to immediately be removed? Yeah, those guys. Ever since word got out, I've had people bringing me cassettes. to have this music now has such a strong impact on the people. When I drive through the valleys and play local Pashtun music on the loudspeaker, people out in the village are singing and dancing. A lot can be said for music changing things. There's so much that's right, yet so very, very much that's wrong with that story from Spacewar.com by way of the French agency press. An interesting accusation from Kurt Nemo over on InfoWars. Code Pink supports the mass murder of Afghans. Now, of course, this all connects to Cindy Sheehan and the protests that we just covered. How disgusting. Code Pink supporters, or rather, Code Pink supports the mass murder of Afghans. Murder is apparently fine with Code Pink co-founder Media Benjamin if it results in women's rights. We've been feeling a sense of fear, the people, of the return of the Taliban. So many people are saying that if the U.S. troops left the country, it would collapse, we'd go into civil war. A palpable sense of fear that is making us start to reconsider that, Media Benjamin told the Christian Science Monitor. The apparent shift in policy comes in the wake of a week-long trip to Afghanistan by Code Pink members, where activists were surprised to find a lot of support among women's rights activists for maintaining the U.S. and NATO presence in the country, writes Daniel Tenser for Raw Story. They are foundation-funded, so what do you expect? Another poll, another bad news from CQPolitics.com. Americans expecting no resolution in Afghanistan. Majorities of American adults think the war in Afghanistan cannot be won and that its most likely conclusion would be no conclusion at all. More from InfoWars. More from Kurt Nemo. Massive ordnance penetrator, yet another sign that Obama could strike Iran. The Pentagon has put a new weapon on the fast track, the massive ordnance penetrator, which again reminds you, you know, everything having to do with war is pretty much all having to do with sex language, as George Carlin pointed out so well. The massive ordnance penetrator is a 30,000-pound bomb designed to hit targets buried 200 feet below the ground. Earlier this year, the Pentagon Comptroller sent a request to shift funds to the House and Senate Appropriations and Armed Services Committee in order to fast-forward the development and procurement of this MOP, according to ABC. That notification was included in a 93-page reprogramming request that included hundreds of items. You can download the PDF thanks to ABC News and InfoWars. The comptroller said the Pentagon planned to spend $19.1 million to procure four of the bombs, $28 million to accelerate the bomb's development and testing, and $21 million to accelerate the integration of the bomb onto B-2 stealth bombers. Bunker busters. You know what those are for? Those are to hit those suspected underground nuclear sites. Again, the foolish idea that you can have some kind of controlled nuclear strike is ridiculous. And, as we noted on the B-side just a little bit ago, Max Keiser, as always, breaking it down, Obama is a puppet of the war machine. It's not stopping a damn thing. But no one seems to mention, and he very cleverly didn't exactly mention them himself, but nobody ever seems to want to mention that other rogue Middle East state that has lots of undeclared nuclear weapons, but ooh, we can't do that. That's the third rail, my friends. You can't say the I word. Sadly enough, but thankfully, it's coming out. This from the Times Online. American troops in Afghanistan losing heart and morale, say Army chaplains.
The tragedy of what is happening in Afghanistan now is so unnecessary. It didn't have to be. had the Bush administration 2001, 2002, 2003 not taken its eye off the ball and decided to invade Iraq instead of really consolidating their victory in Afghanistan in 2001, had they concentrated on building this country up, had they concentrated on winning over the people while the Taliban were routed and licking their wounds in Pakistan, this country could have got back on its feet. It could be enjoying peace for the first time since the Soviet invasion in 1979, instead of which it's engulfed by rising violence, by a bitter and intractable and seemingly interminable conflict between the insurgency and the coalition troops. It's so sad. It really is. However misguided was the decision by the Bush administration not to pursue Osama bin Laden, not to crush the Taliban while they could have done, not to really pour the resources into this country that is needed for rebuilding, and instead to go after Saddam Hussein. And now the chickens are coming home to roost with a vengeance, because you're seeing the lessons the insurgents learned in Iraq now being used here. Witness today's suicide bombing in Kabul. Where did they learn the techniques? Iraq.
The last two notes on this War Horse posting. A good note. By way of the Telegraph, Japan threatens to kick out U.S. troops. But the last article in this War Horse posting, Afghaniversary protests, morale, and money. It's time for the money. Because again, follow the money. From Press TV, U.S. House passes $680 billion defense bill. The U.S. House of Representatives has passed a $680 billion defense policy bill for the fiscal year 2010 that includes funds to train Afghan security forces. The bill, which passed 281 to 146, satisfied most of the funding requests made in the Pentagon's budget submission for the fiscal year that began October 1st. It reflected a compromise hammered out between the two houses of Congress. However, lawmakers defied Obama's veto threat and approved $560 million to continue work on an alternative engine for the F-35 fighter jet built by GE and Rolls-Royce. The legislation would also raise military pay by 3.5% and assign $6.5 billion for mine-resistant armored vehicles known as MRAPs. And on, the last note, before the bill can be signed into law by Obama, it has to be approved by the Senate. More war. More funding for wars. More renewals of the Patriot Act. More warrantless wiretapping. More spying on Americans. More indefinite detention. More of the same. Now, before I start to get all overheated here, I glance at the clock, and I notice that I should tell you now that we're into hour number two of episode 144 of MediaMonarchy.com. It's October 9th, 2009. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show MediaMonarchy.com, Food World Order, and Cyberspace War. We're broadcasting live, as always, thanks to the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org. ZeroPointRadio.com and RevereRadio.net, broadcasting MediaMonarchy.com live online, as well as through LPFM and pirate radio stations around the country like FROlympia.org, BoulderFreeRadio.com, Ground Zero Radio in Canton, Georgia, and BerkeleyLiberationRadio.net in Berkeley, California on 104.1 FM. I should make a note and make a thanks to my friend Bevan over on the East Coast. She liked my status report on Facebook.com/Media Monarchy, that MediaMonarchy.com is now live on PRA Radio and Zero Point Radio and Revere Radio. Again, using the currently most popular digital town square to gather and spread the word about what's really going down in the world. So we've mostly been focusing on Polanski and the cyberspace war and blowing up the moon and lip service winning Obama the Nobel Peace Prize despite all those pesky wars abroad. The one thing that I want to throw in a note is that this is kind of like winning an Oscar for a movie that's in pre-production. And it's, you know, behind schedule, and it's over budget, and there's been script problems from day one, and it probably won't even be finished, let alone released. That's akin to Obama winning the Nobel Peace Prize, which again, we note, is named after someone who liked to blow things up. So having said all that, let's hit the latest post on MediaMonarchy.com and go into geopolitics, war crimes, world power, and secret talks. The first thing we note that last Friday, again, as we were tracking all the developing stories, one of the biggies being, of course, Ireland supposedly approving the Lisbon Treaty, even though, you know, they'd voted it down before, and even though this was the exact same thing, again, that essentially assures their assimilation into the European Union. My man James Corbett of CorbettReport.com breaks it down. The first order of business for the post-Lisbon Treaty EU, that would be appointing a war criminal as its president. Major media outlets from the BBC in Britain to RTE in Ireland are reporting that the yes side scored a resounding victory in Ireland's vote last Friday on the EU-Lisbon Treaty. With the treaty's ratification, the obstacles preventing the total federalization of the EU superstate are now removed. As the Daily Mail reported earlier in the week, one of the first orders of business for the post-Lisbon EU will be to appoint Tony Blair. That would be Tony Blair as the first president of the European Union. This move has been fully expected ever since Tony Blair's highly suspect conversion to Catholicism 2 years ago. Of course, the many laudatory pieces, and even the adversarial ones, we're likely to read about Mr. Blair in the coming weeks, will signally fail to mention that he has been accused of numerous war crimes and crimes against humanity, including continuing economic sanctions imposed on Iraq from 1990 until its invasion at the hands of a government in 2003 that resulted in the deaths of at least 500,000 Iraqi children. Conspiracy to join with another power in a war of aggression, the most supreme international war crime. High treason in manufacturing a case for war, including the famous Downing Street memo. And participating in a political and military coalition with the U.S. and Iraq that deployed contravened weapons like white phosphorus. Of course, the Irish electorate has not only allowed Blair to become the president of the EU. According to the National Platform EU Research and Information Center, which has compiled a list of 13 facts about the Lisbon Treaty, they've also created a self-amending treaty that will no longer allow national vetoes on key issues like tax harmonization, crime, transport, energy, and public health and services. So now that the EU has won by forcing the Irish public to vote on the Lisbon Treaty until they got it right, liberty-minded people the world over will have the uncomfortable experience of watching the expansion of this vast, new, tyrannical superstate headed by unaccountable bureaucrats. Of course, given that the EU has been frustrated in its attempts to undermine national sovereignty again and again and again, link, link, source, source, link, when the people are actually given a chance to have their say, we can only hope that the entire EU enterprise has been so discredited now that the political opposition to this rising EU federation will continue to rise. The coming weeks and months will be the most critical for the creation of this pumped-up regional superpower. One can only hope that the European citizenry will redouble their efforts to stop the inevitable power grabs before it's solidified, because the consequences for the entire world if this Nazi-inspired and Bilderberg-organized regional monstrosity is created, and it's simply too ghastly to contemplate. That's another great piece of work from James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. Several more notes on the Lisbon Treaty from the Los Angeles Times. Irish voters on track to approve EU overhaul. But again, we return to CorbettReport.com for an update. Ballot box problems, broken laws casting doubt on the Irish Lisbon referendum result. Evidence, now this was posted yesterday, October 8th. evidence of widespread voting irregularities have emerged from last Friday's Lisbon Treaty referendum in Ireland, calling the yes side's apparent victory into question. The specter of ballot box stuffing in Ireland's second referendum on the Lisbon Treaty was raised last Wednesday when officials charged with tallying the votes were sent ballot boxes 48 hours before voting began in direct violation of Irish regulations requiring that the boxes be delivered directly to voting stations under Gardaí escort at 7 a.m. on the day of the vote. According to reports, the complaints of one of the returning officers who was concerned about the serious breach of, you know, election security on the basis that the ballot boxes had no commercial value and thus were not in danger of being stolen. The agency involved in this decision evidently did not address the possibility of ballot box stuffing. But then, further concerns were raised when startling footage emerged on the scene outside the Cork City Hall where the votes were being counted. The footage clearly shows a complete absence of security of the ballots and even the ballot boxes as unidentified people pass in and out of the area where the votes lie waiting to be counted, with one man even seen leaving with one of the ballot boxes. The video has nothing for me to play for you here. But if you watch it, after you see a dude leave the building with a ballot box undisturbed, then the cameraman even enters the counting area himself unimpeded, and there's no sign of any type of security in or around the building. This complete lack of physical security of the ballot boxes show that the result of the referendum is now in doubt. Will anything come of it, or will this just be another shady election where the results have been predetermined and shoved down your throat? But back to Raw Story, Ireland poll breaks EU's Lisbon Treaty deadlock. In the first place that I did see that interesting video that we just mentioned in that second Corbett Report article, Irish referendum outcome is null and void. Video shows suspicious pre-dawn movement of ballot boxes. That's from .connector UK. What did they immediately do after this resounding quote-unquote yes? From the Telegraph, EU draws up plans to establish itself as a world power. The European Union has drawn up secret plans to establish itself as a global power in its own right, with the authority to sign international agreements on behalf of member states. Confidential negotiations on how to implement the Lisbon Treaty have produced proposals to allow the EU to negotiate treaties and even open embassies across the world. A letter conferring a full legal personality for the Union has been drafted in order for a new European diplomatic service to be recognized as fully fledged negotiators by international bodies in all non-EU countries. According to one confidential paper, the first pilot embassies are planned in New York, Kabul, and Addis Ababa. EU draws up plans to establish itself as a world power. That's from the Telegraph. And on around the world we move. Honduran coup leaders tighten their grip. That's from Consortium News. That's right, if you recall, we mentioned it when it broke here. There was a coup, a military coup in Honduras several weeks ago. It came out very shortly that some of the leaders of this military coup, or at least some of the lead muscle men in this military coup, were, of course, trained at the School of Americas at Fort Benning in Georgia. Former Japanese finance minister Nakagawa found dead at his home. That's from Bloomberg. Italy's highest court strips Berlusconi of immunity protection. That's from the Los Angeles Times. Suicide bomber kills five at a United Nations office in Pakistan. Oh, but look at this. From Xinhua, out of China, El Baradei, who I believe... Let's double-check this before I say it. That's right. He's the Director General of the International Atomic Energy Agency, the IAEA. You know, that agency that we send into places to look and see if they've got shady nuclear things going on? El Baradei says a nuclear Israel is the number one threat to the Mideast. Again, we referenced Max Kaiser earlier noting the undocumented nuclear rogue state in the Middle East that no one wants to mention. Returning to Press TV, we note that U.S. real army chiefs are holding secret talks on Iran. Israeli Army Chief of Staff Lieutenant General Gabi Ashkenazi and his American counterpart Admiral Mike Mullen have held secret talks in France with a special focus on Iran. The two officials, who met in the northern French region of Normandy on Sunday, also discussed the Middle East. Ashkenazi also discussed the developments in Iran with French Armed Forces Chief of Staff General Jean-Louis Georgelin. The meeting comes ahead of the U.S. and Israel's largest military drill, which is scheduled for later this month. The maneuver is planned to simulate missile strikes on Israel. For years, Israel has threatened to bomb Iran's nuclear installations. And again, we'll note, if you've listened to MediaMonarchy.com for any amount of time, you know that we track the military drills and the war games and the exercises, because sometimes, just sometimes, they have a tendency of flipping live. A new article from Webster Griffin Tarpley. Iceland's political leader calls for a debt moratorium as their government crumbles. If you recall, many, many months ago, their economy pretty much fell apart, and now, of course, they've been fast-tracked into assimilation into the European Union. We break your back, and then you'll go along with anything. That can't happen here, though. But then it gets more disturbing, and there are more updates that I posted to this geopolitics posting. I put them up yesterday by way of todayszaman.com. Erdogan notes that our world misleaders should take heed of protesters' voices while drawing up the New World Order. Prime Minister Recep Tayyip Erdogan has called on the IMF and World Bank leaders to take into account the voices of protesters when formulating the post-crisis New World Order. Now, I believe, just scanning over that, that is Turkey's Prime Minister. Make sure you listen to those little people while you're setting up your New World Order. Side note from the Deutsche Press Agency, a quarter of the world's population is Muslim. A survey shows, oh my God, we're all going to die. There's a great bit on the new record from Patton Oswalt that goes fully into religion and essentially calls it sky cake. You should check it out. My Weakness is Strong from Patton Oswalt. Having said that, the last two notes on this geopolitics posting, war crimes, world power, and secret talks are disturbing, but not that surprising. Frederic Mitterrand admitted to paying for sex with young boys in Thailand. That is from The Telegraph, but we'll jump to more from Raw Story. French culture minister embroiled in pedophilia row. French culture minister Frederic Mitterrand said Thursday he would not resign over his autobiographical novel that describes paying Asian boys for sex and denied having ever engaged in pedophile acts. Mitterrand said he never considered resigning since controversy over the book erupted this week after his staunch defense of fugitive filmmaker Roman Polanski arrested in Switzerland on a U.S. warrant of child sex charges. French President Nicolas Sarkozy had earlier Thursday told the minister, the nephew of late socialist President François Mitterrand, that he still had his support. When The Bad Life, described by its publisher as a novel inspired by autobiography, was published in 2005, Mitterrand confirmed he had paid for sex in Asian brothels but rejected rumors of pedophilia. The minister, appointed to the right-wing government in June on Thursday, again said he had never paid a minor for sexual favors and insisted he had never done any wrong against anyone in my life. Never. So he never paid a minor for sexual favors. He probably had his assistant, you know, take care of the money. That's usually how it's done. And isn't it interesting that, now, again, of course, as we said many, many times, we're nonpartisan here, but isn't it always interesting that at least the Democrats, when they get busted for their scandals, it's usually with a chick. That ain't the case with the righties, my friends. We ease in now to this. And again, this is something we briefly covered on our first foray, our experimental pilot test recording of a new collaborative video effort between MediaMonarchy.com and CorbettReport.com. Again, keep your eyes peeled for that. More coming soon. Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad was born a Jew. This is from Raw Story, and we have numerous links for you to go down the hole thanks to HistoryCommons.org and The Telegraph and Ynet News. In a stunning report last Saturday, a British newspaper claimed to have uncovered proof that Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, notorious among the international community for denying the Holocaust, was himself actually born a Jew. According to The Telegraph, a high-res photograph of Ahmadinejad holding up his Iranian identity card taken just before the 08 election reveals that his family changed its name shortly after he was born, renouncing their Jewish faith and adopting Islam. A close-up of the document reveals he was previously known as Saborgian, S-A-B-O-U-R-J-I-A-N, Saborgian, a Jewish name meaning cloth weaver. The name is even on the list of reserved names for Iranian Jews compiled by Iran's Ministry of the Interior, noted the Israeli publication Ynet News. At the annual Quds Day rally in Tehran last month, the Iranian president reiterated his denial of the Holocaust and blasted the Israeli government. We've covered bits of that before, and we're not going to get into it again right here. But this is just another one of those amazing examples. As if all of this ridiculousness didn't resemble some bad movie or some terrible soap opera, we get big reveals like this. Like, dun dun dun! You're a Jew! Let's get into the latest 9/11 updates. Where, again, I'll mention and re-mention for you to go check out last month's 8th anniversary 9/11 interview epic episode with Richard Andrew Grove of TragedyAndHope.com. So I remind you to look back at that again while we look ahead to the inclusion of the NYC CAN petition on the ballot in New York City coming up next month for a new independent investigation into the events of 9/11. So this latest update posting, warnings, failures, dead dogs, and Deutsche. We first note again from the Telegraph, MI5 warned that Osama, that's Emmanuel Goldstein, was planning attacks on the morning of 9/11. Newly published memos disclose an escalating concern about the terrorist leader right up until the moment he launched his attacks in the World Trade Center in New York and the Pentagon in Washington, killing nearly 3,000 people. But the files also reveal that MI5 discounted the threat from Islamic extremism just 6 years before the attack and did not believe that America was vulnerable. The author of this book, Defense of the Realm, has been given access to all of MI5's files dating back to its foundation in October 1909. Oh, so it's their 100th anniversary. Isn't that sweet? In this, Defense of the Realm, the first authorized history of an intelligence service anywhere in the world. So in a memo from July 6, 2001, MI5 said the increase in the number of reports were, quote, sufficient to conclude that Osama bin Laden and those that share his agenda are currently well advanced in operational planning for a number of major attacks on Western interests. Now, is this actionable intelligence? If we just would have listened to MI5 on that morning, would all of this have been avoided? I doubt it. But it's another to add to the massive, massive pile of forewarnings and prior knowledge leading up to the day that changed everything. Again, on my anniversary episode, back on 9/11/09, we went over my main 11 points of contention, which among numerous other things, mentioned again. The prior warnings, the insider trading, the foreknowledge, the cover-up of the crime scene, the infiltration of the hijackers, despite the protestation of good FBI and Visa agents, these guys were still let into the country. They were told that their terror cover, their terror designation, that was just a cover. We knew who they were. We knew they were in the country. These devout Muslims who were at strip clubs and doing coke, like any good conservative religious person would do. So we add this MI5 warning to the pile of prior knowledge. An FBI veteran executive calls for a special counsel, an investigation, and prosecutions in the Sybil Edmonds case. Bradblog.com has been following all the new latest developments and revelations concerning the Sybil Edmonds case. That was one of my 11 points of contention. If you're not familiar with Sybil Edmonds, you should be. She has noted that the U.S. worked with OBL up until 9/11. She also noted a lot of the disturbing connections in the intelligence behind the scenes, dealing with the U.S. and Turkey and Afghanistan. John Farmer claims that 9/11 was the result of, quote, massive bureaucratic failures. John Farmer, of course, the author of the new book, The Ground Truth, The Untold Story of America Under Attack on 9/11. He was an attorney for the 9/11 Commission. We did note when that book came out just a couple months ago, we gave it some positive mentions, but again, what we see is limited hangout. It was a mistake. It was massive bureaucratic failures. That's how it happened. That's how we didn't investigate the crime scene. It was a bureaucratic failure. That's how we told people the air was safe to breathe. Oh, that was just bureaucracy, red tape. That's why we didn't set up an investigation for another year. That's why we didn't answer 70% of the victims' families' questions. Just bureaucratic failures. Nothing to see here. Move along. U.S. concealed interrogation tapes of 9/11 suspect until now. That's from the Washington Independent. Interestingly enough, the man who, in the months after 9/11, actually did an amazing couple-part series on Fox News about Israeli involvement and connections to 9/11. There we go, touching that third rail again. Ow. We Are Change Minnesota did a little interview with Carl Cameron of Fox News that apparently, when he's on hidden camera, he's all about questioning 9/11. When the camera's in his face, yeah, not so much. Rest in peace, Taz, the last 9/11 search and rescue dog, a beloved member of the NYPD, passed away. Taz, a 90-pound German Shepherd who was the last of the active canine dogs who helped search the World Trade Center site after 9/11, died from cardiac arrest last Sunday, and he was 9 years old. We have covered the deaths of several of the other search and rescue dogs. Again, the toxic dust. Thanks, EPA and Christine Todd Whitman, for telling us the air was safe to breathe, because you wanted to get Wall Street back on track. See, they had already pulled off their major Reichstag event, but they needed to hurry up and scoop and dump and get Wall Street open again, because they needed to get set on their next massive op. And that would be what we've now seen and what we're now soaking in, if you have a pot to soak in. And that would be the controlled demolition of our economy that's fake anyway. Demolition of ex-Deutsche Bank building to resume at ground zero. Deutsche ready for rip down. We've got reports from the New York Times and the New York Post. Again, those buildings in ground zero that still have strange things happening to them. There have been fires, there have been deaths, all kinds of ridiculousness still swirls around ground zero in New York to this very day, 8+ years later. And again, we return to RussiaToday.com, where we noted last week, Jane Polisino, I believe, 9/11 victim's family member, widow, she supports the NYC Coalition for Accountability Now, nyccan.org. She supports a new investigation of 9/11. One of the folks featured at that March for Answers promoting the NYC CAN petition was none other than Rescue Me star Daniel Sinjata, who in this brief clip from a nice long 12-minute interview with Russia Today, of course, says that the government explanations of 9/11 make no sense.
8,000 New Yorkers are calling for a new 9/11 investigation.
Why didn't our fighter pilots intercept the planes?
Why was my uncle's crime scene tampered with?
Why did the military lie to the 9/11 commission?
NYC CAN, a coalition of victims, relatives, survivors, and rescue workers, is fighting to make the new investigation a ballot box issue during New York's mayoral election in November. At a recent march, one of the loudest calls for action came from actor Daniel Sinjata.
Exposing 9/11 as an inside job on their whole macabre show of horrors, both at home and abroad.
The Rescue Me actor doesn't mince his words and tells RT his fight for answers remains unyielding.
Why do you support another impending investigation into the September 11th attack?
Well, there are just so many things, so many questions that have not been answered, very disturbing questions, especially when you look at them from a contextual standpoint. I can point out one thing in particular, the 9/11 Commission. Not one word in the 9/11 Commission report about the collapse of Building 7. As a matter of fact, during proceedings dealing with the NYC competition, I believe the judge who's presiding over the matter, his name is Judge Lerner, when Building 7 was brought up in the courtroom, he said, building what? He didn't even know what Building 7 was or how it related to 9/11. I'm not sure if he knew, but it collapsed that day. Now, you know, any report or investigation that purports to be a full accounting of the events surrounding the day and on the day of 9/11 should clearly have addressed at least a couple paragraphs to the collapse of Building 7. But there was no mention of it whatsoever, and that's just one particular item. I mean, 7% of the questions proposed by the victim's family members during the 9/11 Commission were completely ignored. So that fact alone, I think, begs for a real investigation into the matter. We also have 60% of the Commission members at this point who have said something to the effect that the investigation was thwarted, that their attempts to investigate were blocked, that they were lied to by the government and by the CIA. They used every word except the word cover-up, basically, and one or two of them may have even used that word as well. So when you have all of these people dissenting from the validity of the 9/11 Commission report, even 60% of its own members, the people who sat on the commission, I mean, what else can you do but reinvestigate or maybe investigate properly for the first time?
Reinvestigate or investigate properly for the first time. Either way, we will be happy to see the NYC CAN petition show up on New York voters' ballots next month. The last two notes in the updates to this 9/11 posting, warnings, failures, dead dogs in Deutsche. Judge says lucky Larry Silverstein can't sue the WTC Airlines for $2.8 billion. This is by way of cranesnewyork.com, and we add it to the long laundry list of lucky Larry's amazing monetary achievements. Of course, being the one who secured the lease to the World Trade Center in the months leading up to 9/11, was successfully able to claim that both plane attacks on the buildings were two separate terror events, thereby giving him essentially double indemnity. That's why that's so famous. That's why that film noir flick is so famous. Double indemnity doesn't happen. You generally have to be in collusion with some folks and, you know, maybe hop on a train and push that dude off. Judge challenges Silverstein's $2.8 billion WTC Airlines suit. Developer Larry Silverstein may not be able to collect $2.8 billion in damages he was seeking from airlines and security companies he claims are partially responsible for 9/11, according to the most recent ruling in this 8-plus-year-long saga. That's from Cranes, New York, and the last note of 9/11 updates. Moussaoui trial testimony has now been published. That is, again, thanks to the fine work at historycommons.org. If you're new to all this and you wonder if you've never really dug into any of the questions concerning 9/11, and you've just heard your wacky friends talk about controlled demolition, again, we don't, here on Media Monarchy, we don't worship at the Church of Controlled Demolition. There's far, far, far more important things than the speculative questions about the towers. And again, I don't want to get into that now. Are the collapses suspicious? Absolutely. But does it get to the heart of the matter? I don't think so. HistoryCommons.org and their complete 9/11 timeline is an amazing resource. All it is point by point, minute by minute, day by day, week by week, month by month, year by year, breakdown in the events leading up to, the day of, and the aftermath of the official story of 9/11. It doesn't make up your mind for you, it just tells you what has been reported. And that's how we know, ultimately, that the official 9/11 story can't be true. Is all the things that have come out. Do I formulate my own theory about what happened? No. That's why we want a real investigation. With subpoena power and punishment power. Not cover-up and promotion power. So in our last half hour here on episode 144 of MediaMonarchy.com, we've got a massive, disgusting post. Under the Police State International updates, there's a kind of crush all over the world. And this is kind of ugly. This is another one of those bits that, again, you may read the news here and there, you may see some things here and there. You may not believe all of it coming from the alternative media, nor should you. Don't believe me, I'm just the messenger. But I've done a lot of work in trying to compile and give you contextual information to, again, overturn the game table on that shady city street corner, pulling the shell game on you over and over again. We'll start it off with what a blogger on CBS News Coop's Corner is calling the screwball meme du jour, and that is something that we covered last week, and that would be, is the U.S. headed for a coup? There's a screwball meme making the rounds about whether the United States is ripe for a military takeover. Normally, I dismiss this as yet more apocalyptic blather from the same folks who get worked up about black helicopters and FEMA concentration camps, because, of course, we know those things don't exist. We've only documented them in dozen triplicate times on this website. What's interesting is that both extremes on the political spectrum are offering up the same apocalyptic prediction. Maybe it's a slow Wednesday, but their prognostications have managed to garner quite a bit of attention, perhaps another sign of the increasingly fraught condition of our nerves in this autumn of our discontent. A writer named John L. Perry kicked things off when he published a column on the right-leaning website Newsmax. The piece has actually been pulled from their website. Another conspiracy to rob Americans of their liberties? There is a link you can read the archived version where Perry writes, quote, "Will the day come when patriotic general and flag officers sit down with the president or with those who control him and work out the national equivalent of a family intervention with some form of limited shared responsibility? Imagine a bloodless coup to restore and defend the Constitution through an interim administration that would do the serious business of governing and defending the nation. Skilled, military-trained nation-builders would replace accountability-challenged radical left commissars. Having bonded with his twin teleprompters, the president would be detailed for ceremonial speech-making. Military intervention is what Obama's exponentially accelerating agenda for fundamental change toward a Marxist state is inviting upon America. A coup is not an ideal option, but Obama's radical ideas is not acceptable or reversible." This is perhaps another one of those cases where you look at the two supposed sides and say, you know, I don't really want either. We, of course, note, and I put up the poster next to this posting on Police State International, there's a kind of crush all over the world. The poster for the film, you may have remembered, starring Burt Lancaster, Kirk Douglas, and Ava Gardner, and it's called 7 Days in May, with a quote at the top of the poster. "I'm suggesting, Mr. President, there's a military plot to take over the government of these United States next Sunday." We went over this last May, Obama's possible 7 Days in May moment, but we don't have time right now. Further down the list of police state updates, UK surveillance state a good thing, says BBC. DHS doles out Fed cash to deploy military LRADs in U.S. cities. That would be the long-range acoustic devices. Those would be the ones we saw in Pittsburgh recently at the G20. Those are the things that you can't really defend against. Those are the things that they used in those Middle East countries, but we always told you it was going to be for you. So those sonic sound wave weapons are all coming to a city near you. There are tons of videos and audio reports contained within this, but don't have time to play any of the clips. Mass graves in Houston, ? Recently surfaced video shows numerous mass grave crypts in Houston, but then the local media out of Texas as well as Arizona attempt to debunk the mass grave story by basically saying, no, this is just for our veterans who are now all getting old and passing away at a massive clip. Which of course is true, but that's classic misdirection. We have documented the preparation for mass graves in this country as well as in the UK related to the pandemic, whereas we've already noted the shot is the pandemic. And they use a nice little PR smear that, again, if you're talking about mass graves, well, you're disrespecting our veterans. From Huffington Post, Mayor Jim Kalb. And where's this guy from? Oh, he's out of Portsmouth, Ohio. Mayor Jim D. Kalb of Portsmouth, Ohio, called blogger Robert Foray a, quote, worthless piece of shit. That's the kind of discourse we've hit. Okay, I lied. There is one clip we're going to hit in this police state breakdown because it's one that I swiped from WKYT and posted up to youtube.com/media monarchy. Military damages Kentucky neighborhood during their urban warfare drills.
Knocked over as well as lawn furniture thrown across yards in one Frankfort neighborhood. And the reason for the mess? The U.S. Marines have been training in their high-tech Osprey aircraft, which are planes that can hover and operate like helicopters, two large rotors. But as Mark Kennedy reports tonight, people in that area didn't know what was making all the racket.
It's like a tornado.
And when Susie Nava and her neighbors,
the house started shaking, my couch was shaking,
came outside, they thought one had hit.
It picked it straight up, flung it, and hit my car, and then landed right there.
My little one, Dolly, she came running through there, and she was screaming at the top of her lungs. Says, Mom, it's a tornado, it's a tornado.
Just about everything in this backyard was knocked over or thrown. This swing was over here. You can see it's over there now. This swing set here in front of me was about 15 feet on the other side. It was knocked over. Luckily, the homeowner says her children weren't playing out here.
Jennifer Long, who's 8 months pregnant, was outside with her two-year-old at the time.
We were standing out back here, and I look up, and you can literally see the guys standing in the airplane itself. And it was like we was going to wave, and then my daughter held her ears because all the debris was flying everywhere.
According to a Marine Corps officer, it was a V-22 Osprey aircraft like this one doing some training on trying to land in a nearby football field.
What we're going to learn how to land in those tight spots in our urban environment. Those pilots are getting ready. So when we deploy, maybe we have to use some kind of landing zone like that somewhere else in the world, you know, some foreign country.
But for a short time in this Frankfort neighborhood, the Marine practice made a lot of people panic.
I was hanging on because I was waving up in the air. My hands were slipping off. I thought, I have to calm myself down. I don't end up going into labor, you know. I was like, I got to come down.
Rebels and Coco panicked too when a tree came crashing down on their kennel.
Uh-oh, you know, raccoon, wild animal like kitty, but never tree gonna come down to my dog.
No animals or people were injured, and the Marine Corps officer apologized and said a team would be out tomorrow to survey the damage. In Frankfort, I'm Mark Kennedy, WKYT 27 News First.
Now, they note the panic caused, and we would have to note that, of course, the panic caused by these military drills is a main part of the operation. It's to get you desensitized to the fact of seeing the military roll down your street. Yes, they do PR. Yes, they do checkpoints. And it's all supposed to look good, but again, it's all in complete violation of posse comitatus. The military is not supposed to do domestic law enforcement, but it's desensitization. It's the classic metaphor of the boiling frog. If you throw a live frog into a pot of boiling water, he'll jump out. But if you put him in a pot of cold water and slowly turn up the heat, he'll sit in there until he dies. Now, having said all that, I will try and keep my editorializing to a minimum while we blast through the rest of these police state updates. It's hard, and I'll see if I can do it. Feds sentence Elaine Brown to 35 years in prison. Elaine Brown, of course, the wife of Ed Brown, both convicted and pilloried tax protesters. Investigation could sink American police force. This would be the disturbing story that's been coming out of Hardin, Montana, about a private police force that has been working in this new facility that on the front end wants to take all the guys from Gitmo when Obama closes down Gitmo. They're vying to get all those guys to bring them to Hardin because we've got this new facility and it'd get lots of jobs for people to, stack people in pyramids and point at genitals. American police force. We covered all of that last week, and it's a bizarre story that probably needs a lot more investigation. But again, I digress. APF spokesperson holds an emotional press conference, and the lawyer quits the whole thing. Then the American police force changes their name and logo and website to diffuse tension. All those updates coming from Paul Joseph Watson and Truth News and InfoWars. Indianapolis to enlist citizens in terror watch program. That's from thestarpress.com. Police chiefs back local terror watch. That's from the Washington Times. New York man accused of using Twitter to direct protesters during G20 summit. That's from the Guardian. New York City to establish surveillance network in Midtown. Police in New York tighten security around transportation hubs. Midtown next in NYPD terror net. Those coming from the New York Post, NJ.com, and the New York Times, respectively. Missile possibly launched in Liberty County, Texas. That's from MyFoxHouston.com. Oklahoma trooper Daniel Martin being investigated again. That's from NewsOK.com. Believe that would be the trooper who choked an EMT over battling about whose was longer and who had more control over a situation. All those videos are available. U.S. Senate candidate... Oh, wait, I jumped one. Sorry. Jet fighters may soar over Houston. Again, more drills, more desensitization. There's a video from Raw Replay. ACLU says the arrest of that aforementioned G20 Twitter user is intimidation. A U.S. Senate candidate says martial law is needed in Chicago. And again, that's not a change on the story. That's not an alteration of the headline. We hit the press release from PR-inside.com, U.S. Senate candidate, martial law needed in Chicago. Andy Martin says emergency measures are needed to stem the tide of violence in Chicago. Of course, the home of Obama and the corrupt town that Capone and Daley built. More from Raw Replay. DHS computers search for suspicious flyers. U.S. announces reforms of immigration detention centers. That's from DPA. And jumping over to the U.K., an internet game that awards points for people spotting crimes on CCTV camera is branded a snooper's paradise. That's from the Daily Mail, and it's called Internet Eyes, and you can't make this stuff up. Public to monitor CCTV from home. That's from the BBC. We've got 160,000 ID kits going out to Indiana students. That's from wishtv.com. And amazingly enough, my man Alex Ansari from right here in Portland, Oregon, traveled up to Seattle and met up with We Are Change Seattle. And what did they capture? Urban warfare exercises in Seattle. Black helicopters captured on video. It's not a conspiracy theory. And it's all probably in preparation for martial law. Furthermore, from the Register, U.S. to export riot roasting ray gun, more disturbing weapons. In another disturbing development, a nice video from Homeland Stupidity, hosted and narrated by football legend John Elway, of course portrays average Americans as terrorists. More on the Dallas bomb plot, did Smotty have a handler? Suspicions of more FBI entrapment. That's from Alex Constantine. Military fighters practicing aerial intercepts Thursday. That's from NOLA.com. NORAD exercise flights planned over Nevada skies. More vigilant guard drills beginning October 12th. Again, as we noted in my interview with Peter Lavenda, that's Aleister Crowley's birthday. Anti-terror drill held at Fort Bragg. That's from WITN.com. ACLU says extracting DNA from suspects unconstitutional. That's true. And that's from Threat Level. New York City to fight terrorism with more street corner cameras. That's from ChristianScienceMonitor.com. But as we have noted from the worldwide leader in CCTV, the UK, is that it doesn't actually lead to solving more crimes. Cops attack anti-war demonstrators in Rochester, New York. And lastly, a California man blows off his hands with explosives inside a daycare center, and authorities say that neo-Nazi material was found in that victim's home. That's from ABC News, and another example of the growing wave of homegrown errorism. Very quickly, let's see if we can blast through the last two things here. Media memes, CBS sex, MJ, TV rituals, and Scientology we briefly mentioned last week. David Letterman, blackmailed, admits affairs. There's a video that YouTube tries to squash, but Raw Story has it up on Raw Replay. Letterman blackmailed, admits affairs. Will Letterman's stupid human tricks turn off his fans? Predawn Note launched Letterman extortion case. And from Time, insiders baffled by alleged Letterman extortionist Robert Joel Halderman. We also have Halderman arrested in the $2 million Letterman extortion plot. And again, we note, it's always interesting any time things happen with the Columbia Broadcasting System and all their connections to the CIA and Skull and Bones. Michael Jackson was healthy before his death, according to the autopsy. Washington Times and the Bushies hail Reverend Sun Young Moon. That's from Consortium News. A great breakdown from a new site I've been checking out more called VigilantCitizen.com, and they go into the recent MTV VMAs 09, the occult mega ritual, basically starting with the opening prayer and invocation from the leader, Madonna, and then we go into the Hail Satan prayer from Jack Black and the bizarre performances from Lady Gaga and all the bizarre occult symbolism and trappings. The last bit ran as a full piece in the most recent issue of Wired, How to Enrage the Church of Scientology, where they basically note that it's really easy to piss off the Church of Scientology because they can't seem to abide by one of the main rules of the internet, and that's don't feed the trolls. Lastly, on episode 144 of MediaMonarchy.com, IBM, Google, and the rebirth of the barcode. So I was quite shocked in the early morning hours of Wednesday, October 7th, when you probably noticed that Google will change its main logo to be whatever's kind of going on the holidays, or if it's someone's birthday or some big event. If you went on Google Wednesday, you noticed that they turned their logo into the barcode equivalent of the word Google. So Google celebrates the 57th anniversary of the barcode. This is from the Telegraph. Users of the internet search engine are being greeted with a barcode in place of the usual Google logo, exactly 57 years after U.S. inventors Norman Woodland and Bernard Silver were granted a patent. That follows recent Google doodles in honor of ancient Chinese philosopher Confucius and Mahatma Gandhi, the father of modern India, which, of course, he didn't get the Nobel Peace Prize, we note. Woodland and Silver, who met while students at Drexel Institute of Technology in Philly, originally devised a system that would encode data in concentric circles. The lines of varying width were developed later, partly inspired by Morse code. According to a Washington Post report, the doodle barcode appears to have been created by encrypting the word Google using code 128, a standard symbology. The original patent was filed by Woodland and Silver in 1949 and granted on October 7th, 1952. However, barcodes were not used commercially until retailers in the National Association of Food Chains agreed on the familiar UPC, Universal Price Code designs that are still seen on billions of worldwide items today. Interestingly enough, the first supermarket scanner that could read UPC barcodes was installed at March's Supermarket in Troy, Ohio in June 1974, and the first product to bear the barcode was a packet of Wrigley's chewing gum. Now that's interesting, but let's take it a little further. From, again, Fox News. But they're not the only place. But like I said, you got to get the news where it's coming from sometimes, and again, we'll add the context. IBM builds barcode reader for DNA. Imagine a world where medicine is guaranteed not to cause adverse reactions because it's designed for an individual's DNA. Imagine a diet tailored to the precise speed of a person's metabolism, using a little microelectronics, a little physics, and no small dose of biology. International Business Machines, the final solutions company, has brought that futuristic world a little bit closer. It's called the DNA Transistor, and it's a project from IBM Research that aims to advance personalized medicine by making it simpler and much cheaper to read an individual's unique DNA sequence, the special combination of proteins that makes you unlike anyone else. This technology isn't finished yet, but its potential is tantalizing enough that IBM wanted to share it with the world, and the company claims researchers are making progress. Essentially, a barcode reader for genes, the DNA transistor is part technique and part device. It consists of a 3-nanometer wide hole known as a nanopore in a silicon microchip. A sensor in the pore can read DNA and determine its unique makeup. Now, we have a quote from IBM research scientist Gustavo Stolovitsky. Quote, "The technologies that make reading DNA fast, cheap, and widely available have the potential to revolutionize biomedical research and herald an era of personalized medicine. Ultimately, it could improve the quality of medical care by identifying patients who will gain the greatest benefit from a particular medicine and those who are most at risk of adverse reaction." IBM building a barcode reader for DNA. And if all of that isn't unsettling and disturbing enough, as we have noted time and time again, any time we note IBM, International Business Machines, the solutions company, they're the final solution company. Just read about IBM and the Holocaust. Make it really simple for you. There's a link to IBMandTheHolocaust.com, the strategic alliance between Nazi Germany and America's most powerful corporation. Written by Edwin Black. And published, forget exactly who it's published by, I don't see it right here, but it's published by a mainstream publisher that, again, we've noted many, many times. Do you think big mainstream publishers would put out books like that if it weren't true? They would be sued into oblivion. IBM The Holocaust is the stunning story of IBM's strategic alliance with Nazi Germany beginning in 1933 in the first weeks that Hitler came to power and continuing well into World War II. As the Third Reich embarked upon its plan of conquest and genocide, IBM and its subsidiaries helped create enabling technologies step by step from the identification and cataloging programs of the 1930s to the selections of the 1940s. It's the Hollerith punch card system. The coordination of the Holocaust would not have happened without the help of IBM. And, of course, not to mention Rockefeller and Standard Oil and the banksters and all that stuff, but we don't have time for that. We've run out of time. Two last things I want to mention and give a big thanks to, again, the folks that we're picking up from Facebook.com/Media Monarchy, friends and family and acquaintances and even virtual friends and fans of MediaMonarchy.com all around the world. You can meet up with me there. I appreciate it. Again, hat tip, thanks to Bevan. It's amazing to see, you know, in real time, friends that I know hopping on, listening to the show. And let me tell you that, again, I'm not perfect. I'm just a messenger. I try and do my best. Yes, I get a little overheated here in the studio. I get my radio muscles where I'm by myself and no one to dispute or argue with what I'm saying. And I realize that. And I try and keep it in check. And I appreciate your appreciation. So having said that, let's run down the quick list of creepy customers coming to MediaMonarchy.com in the past week as I trip over my tongue. United Space Alliance Company out of Houston, Texas visited. We also had the U.S. Agency for International Development, USAID, out of Severna Park, Maryland. The Sacramento County Sheriff's Department out of San Francisco. Human Genome Sciences, interestingly enough, from Jekyll Island, Georgia. We also had the 754th Electronic Systems Group, HQ.AF.MIL, out of Suitland, Maryland. The Walter Reed Army Medical Center out of Reston, Virginia. The Navy Network Information Center out of Alexandria. The United States Marine Corps Network Operations Center out of Quantico. Lyndon LaRouche Political Action Committee visited MediaMonarchy.com out of Purcellville, Virginia. We had UNEP, the United Nations Environmental Program, out of Paris visit. We had General Mills out of Rogers, Minnesota. The Uniform Code Council out of Lawrence Township, New Jersey. They were, of course, reading about IBM, Google, and the rebirth of the barcode. Headquarters USAISC out of Fort Huachuca, Arizona. Lockheed Martin out of Denver, Colorado, and lastly, the United Nations Economic Commission for Africa. Those are just some of the creepy customers visiting MediaMonarchy.com in the past week, and you should be honored to add yourself to that list. So with that, my friends, let me once again implore you to check out my new interview with the author of Sinister Forces, Peter Lavenda. It's an amazing 90-minute journey peering behind the media mask, and it'll be available alongside episode 143B, this episode 144, all coming from your source for news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups, MediaMonarchy.com. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster, imploring you to get active or get radioactive. Take care.
Police would get him just the same.